You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
This is the Classic Auto Mall Show. Broadcast from the studios inside the Classic Auto Mall in Morgantown, Pennsylvania. Just 1 hour west of Philadelphia at Pennsylvania Turnpike exit 298. Featuring nearly 1,000 classic, vintage, and barn find vehicles for sale under one climate-controlled roof. Now, here's your host, Classic Auto Mall president, and the man with all the toys, Stuart Howden.
And welcome, show number 160, hard to believe. We're somewhere in knee-deep in the middle of some time with some kind of weather going on.
Yeah.
And a wreck on the turnpike.
And, you know, I was thinking about that today. We kind of don't mention the weather because you don't know when you're going to be listening right to this down the road. But I'm thinking with winter coming in, this is a great time to start thinking about when it's a lousy day, you come and look at all these cars inside the mall.
And we don't charge you for the heat even. You know, we just charge you for the – we don't charge you for anything. You can just come in for free and walk around and look at – 900 and how many cars today, Steve? How many would you say we have in inventory?
50.
You're so
972.
967. Oh, come on,
so people.
Be aware of your inventory.
When I tell people there's 900 plus cars under one roof, right, they don't believe me.
I know.
So you have to come out and see it.
Well, nobody wants to believe you that, you know. I remember when we had a place that only had 100 cars in it, we'd say we have over 100 cars. 100 cars?
Right, yeah.
And now I'm thinking if we told them 900, they'd be like, no, you don't. Yeah. You're a liar.
Nah, can't be.
Can't possibly be. Yeah, 967 we have in inventory right now. And real quickly, before we get to our guest, you ask where do we sell cars this week?
I did ask.
Wappinger Falls, New York. I'm sure that's wrong. Palatine in Illinois. Hatfield, Pennsylvania. Aston, Pennsylvania. Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. McKees Rocks, Pennsylvania. Did you just sign? Marietta, Georgia. 84, Pennsylvania. 84. Not the number, but I think the lumber company started there.
Yeah.
I had no idea there's an 84.
Englewood Cliffs, New Jersey. Charlotte, North Carolina. Bloomfield Hills, Michigan. Bayshore, New York. Elverson, Pennsylvania. Abingdon, Maryland, Drexel Hill, Pennsylvania, Quakertown, Pennsylvania, and Philly, by golly, Delphia, Pennsylvania.
Nice. Yeah.
So, joining us on the show today via Zoom, is our new friend we met a couple of weeks ago, Mark Steigerwald, the executive director of the International Motor Racing Research Center. Are you in Watkins Glen or are you in Corning or both or?
We are in Watkins Glen, New York.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. The event that we went to was in Corning, so you can understand my confusion. Because I'm easily confused. What a great event that you had honoring Zach Brown.
Thank you.
Oh, my God. That was so much fun. And what a beautiful facility. And that room was just spectacular. That's the best event room I think I've ever been in my life.
Well, yes, they've got outstanding AV capabilities, and we were pretty much to capacity in there. So I think we've heard nothing but positive reviews from our guests. So we're glad. We're planning for next year already.
Oh, that's fantastic! Can you let it? Oh, well, you'll let us know when you know who the recipient's going to be, so we'll start promoting it. But so the International Motor Racing Research Center is pretty amazing. I've been deep diving into your website and learning a lot about you. Your mission statement is preserving and sharing the history of motorsports, and you were an extension of the library there for a while in Watkins Glen, right? And that's how it kind of started, and then it became its own entity.
Yeah, so we're in our 26th year of business. We began as a collection of roughly 200 books in the public library, all devoted to motor racing. It's a natural progression from a couple of shelves to an entire wing of the library, essentially. And these days we house about 6,000 volumes, so 6,000 books, periodicals, video, photo collections, slide collections, you name it. And we've actually have two offsite storage locations. So we've maxed out 6,000 square feet some time ago. So it's a nice problem to have.
Sure. Are there plans for expansion, or what will you do next? Do you know?
We do have plans for expansion. So we purchased property on Franklin Street, which is the main street through Watkins Glen. We're in a design phase currently with a facility. It will be several times larger than the space we occupy now. We've got a little ways to go in terms of finalizing the design spaces internally, but we are out of space and we need to offer more space for exhibits. So a good portion of what we have collected over the years are artifacts of motorsports. So we've got helmets, driver suits, in addition to fine art posters, So we want to be able to showcase our collections over the years in a greater facility. So that's that's really the end goal at this point.
Sure. Well, I mean, there's so much out there, and there's so much, you know, people are somehow mistakenly think that everything that's ever been written or published or said is on the internet. And that's not true at all. There's lots of things that aren't out there that you can't see unless you go to a facility like yours or to have somebody do. And now I'm sure you allow people to do research and send them stuff and copies and all that kind of thing, right?
Oh, yes. We've got a really robust research request program. So we get emails, phone calls several times during the course of a week. Could be from an author. Could be from someone who is whose father or uncle raised. Could be for purposes of restoration, for example. So we log those requests. We have a team of researchers that will delve into past periodicals, photo collections. And by and large, we're able to help almost everybody who approaches us at this point.
Oh, that's fantastic. And I know that, you know, it's so important to preserve that stuff and to make sure that it carries on for generations. Because if we want the younger people to get involved, they've got to know the past as well as the current and the future when it comes to that. And I think that it's so important. And there's so much great stuff out there. I mean, you know, it's got to be like kid in a candy store when you go in there and seeing all that stuff.
Well, yes, when I was an intern, and I was, working on a small collection here of glass slides from the '50s. I was aware of, Watkins Lens history, but this first collection that I processed all those years ago were these, incredible images from racing through the streets of Watkins Glen. And, that was there's been a snowball effect over the years of these types of materials. Pretty, if you think about photos, pretty much every one is unique. And we have some enviable photo archives, all the way from, the 19 teens and 20s all the way through current right. racing. And these are the collections that are utilized most often, for purposes of restoration mm-hmm. or just for the average enthusiast or author that's looking to illustrate their next book.
Well, the motor books, motor racing books and just books about cars in general has noticed a real resurgence lately. We're seeing a lot of great books coming out. George Levy's book on Chaparral and Jay Gelati on the Porsches. And then of course he did a whole book on a Porsche 917 he had him on the show. But, you know, for a while there, automotive books were not very popular, but they seem to have gained some kind of resurgence or something along the way.
There's certainly a niche mark with certain books, and some are on the expensive side, but we've helped a lot of authors write, I think, better books. So Terry O'Neill's an example. Terry's on the other side of the pond.
Right.
He's written some authoritative books they probably weigh about 5-10 pounds a piece.
Right.
But Terry is very thorough. He'll fly over, spend a few days or a week with us, and he leaves happy with additional images and insight into whatever subject he's working on.
Sure.
He's just one example. So we've helped countless other authors along the way to produce better books.
And ultimately, your goal is to not only to educate, but to help people like that and to make sure that the correct information is getting out there and it's not incorrect information, which we seem to find from time to time about things and stories and history.
Oh, exactly. And there's always a new angle to approach, whether it's women in racing, minorities in racing, or not everything has been written about Shelby Cobras, for example.
Sure.
So it's gratifying when we find race results for a car that someone has picked up, and they just don't have a complete history of the car's competition history, and we're able to fill in the gaps quite often.
Sure. Well, the history, I mean, if you take just Watkins Glen, and the history that was from there. I mean, I was looking at some of the photographs and just absolutely amazing. And especially some of the ones of your current exhibits, that are going on right now. Kathy Meredith's motorsports photographs are amazing.
Yes.
Especially like from 1961, the stuff that she was doing, it looked like so bare bones and minimalistic, and, you know, there wasn't much, you know, the suits were not crazy and the cars were bare and the landscape was bare. It was just like, it was like the olden days.
Well, yes, and safety is a pretty good example.
Sure.
So when you look, some of my personal favorites are the shots in the pits, and to see the you know, somebody's drivers wearing street shoes, for example, and not wearing Nomex. The helmet design has certainly changed over the years. So a perfect example of you know, what someone might be looking for in a vintage photo. On track shots are great, but the candid photos of drivers and those quiet moments, or again the pit shots are really they tell a story all in themselves.
Well, and you don't see much smoking while driving like you used to back in the days either, right? Nothing funnier than the guy with a cigar or a cigarette dangling out of his mouth running down the track or whatever, or in the pits with gasoline and, you know, all of that, but a little different times. But you know, that's the beauty of technology and the ability to make things safer and to not, I mean, it used to be that a lot of people died in motorsports every single year. And now it's such a rare occurrence that you hear of, you know, life threatening or death, in motor racing.
No, that's true entirely. And, internally here, we reflect on sort of the glory years, maybe the 60s and the 70s. But truth of the matter is there's been great strides in safety. So our collections allow that window back into the past. And if you go back further, when racing was through the streets here in Watkinson from 48 to 52, you've got an entirely different picture altogether.
Sure.
You know, modified road cars, essentially. The Alfa Romeo that won here in 48, was a high end, production car, essentially. But, I think it was well known that he would probably succeed at the time.
Right.
But, and then there were, you know, specials worked into the mix, as well. But, we always knew, or there was hindsight being 2020, that a dedicated circuit had to be built, and that racing through the streets of Watkinsville was, you know, certainly, would have its moment, but certainly wouldn't last forever.
Sure. Well, from a safety standpoint, I mean, you can't control your environment quite as much when you're, you know, people have a front door and walk out onto the track. And, you know, yes. I mean, you watch some of those European races back in the 60s and 50s, and you think, I just can't believe that 10 people an hour didn't get killed. You know, it was just kids running up on the edges of the track and all that, and you see that. But, you know, it's nice to see that we've made things safer because, you know, it's fun to watch the limits of speed going, you know, 200, I don't know. What's the top speed at Watkins Glen is probably 150, maybe 170, maybe probably I would
for lap speed.
Yeah.
I would hate to guess, but certainly the times keep going down and,
sure,
and the time speed keeps going up.
Exactly. When we return, we'll continue our conversation with Mark Steigerwald from the executive director of the International Motor Racing Research Center in Watkins Glen, New York. We'll see you in a couple minutes.
Are you bored with your commute, listless in your lane, and you don't even have the get up and go on green? 9 out of 10 doctors recommend Classic Auto Mall to cure the common drive. The Classic Auto Mall in Morgantown, PA is a veritable classic car supermarket with classics of all prices, types, and years. So if you need a cure for the common drive, check out Classic Auto Mall in Morgantown or ClassicAutoMall.com. Side effects include not wanting to come home, going to car hop drive-ins, grease under your fingernails, old car smell, and bias.
This is the Classic Auto Mall Show. Listen on this station and wherever you get your podcasts, including Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, Buzzsprout, Deezer, Listen Notes, Pandora, Player FM, Pocket Casts, Podcast Addict, Podcast Index, Podchaser, Spotify, and, of course, ClassicAutoMall.com.
Since the 1960s, J.C. Taylor has been America's premier specialty insurance provider for classic cars, antique autos, modified, and custom vehicles. Our customers have trusted us to protect their prized possessions for more than 6 decades. For more information, or to receive a quote, contact our expert team today by calling 888-ANTIQUE or by visiting our website at jctaylor.com/AWR. That's 888-268-4783. Or visit jctaylor.com/AWR. Drive through time with peace of mind. J.C. Taylor.
What will Victor say next? Find out every Tuesday at 1 p.m. on the On Point with Victor show, only on America's Web Radio.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
And we're back with the Classic Auto Mall Show from the Classic Auto Mall Studio in Morgantown, Pennsylvania, with our friend Mark Steigerwald, the executive director of the IMRRC, the International Motor Racing Research Center. That's a mouthful. How do people find your find out more information? What's the website to get to your facility there?
Our website is racingarchives.org.
Oh, that's a great, lucky for you.
You know, we were lucky to get that early on.
Oh man, there's so many ones. I knew that I should have gotten a bunch of those back in the day of cool things. And you think, oh, why didn't I do that? They were kind of for the taking in the beginning. And of course, you know, now it's hard to get anything. I think cars.com sold for, I don't know, it was crazy money. So, you know what's interesting about having the archives like you do is that so many times, if there wasn't a facility like yours, that stuff would end up, God knows where, maybe in a dumpster. Or at a garage sale, and somebody buys for $5 and throws it in their attic and never thinks about it again.
That's true. That's how we acquire collections frequently. So someone is cleaning out a closet or a basement, and there's a generational gap between whenever somebody collected material and,
right,
and the current generation. So, and sometimes people are pretty self-effacing. Do you want this old shoebox full of photos? and the truth of the matter is, 99% of the time we do because of the uniqueness. But it's certainly more than that. These days, in our 26th year of operations, we do field requests, or I should say acquire collections from professional photographers, for example. Sure. We had a volunteer bring up an entire, it was a Lincoln Navigator. It was supposed to be a cube truck, but imagine a Lincoln Navigator packed to the roof.
Would cover about the same.
Just, it must have been, who knows? I think the suspension was maxed out on the vehicle. Anyhow, we've got three pallets full of photos and slides that need to go through from a professional photographer, about 4 decades worth. Shot for Sports Car Magazine and other publications. Wow. So, and that's just one example. So once, fortunately, we had this reputation as a home for materials like this, and that reputation will presumably grow again further over the years because we do, take the work seriously, and we do want to share these collections with our visitors.
You know, and a lot of the race car drivers have great collections of memorabilia and stuff as well, too. So I imagine that's be a great source for you as time goes on.
Absolutely. Yeah. Personal papers, manuscript materials, some of the materials we have from the SCCA, Sports Car Club of America Foundation. We have an extensive driver file system. Our researchers are up to the letter M, and that's over 400 boxes.
Wow.
Already. So these are, it's extensive materials and information on drivers. So, if you've driven over the years, I wouldn't want to inundate our researchers, but reach out to us at researcherracingarchives.org, and I'm sure we can help you out.
Sure. Yeah. I think, preserving that, because there's some people out there that have maybe only raced a year or so in SCCA but maybe had some kind of other impact in the world. You never know who you're going to stumble upon, right?
Exactly.
We were talking off air about the Simeone Museum. They have a wonderful library there as well, too. And I know that you all have some kind of working agreement with them. How does that work exactly?
Well, we have our peer institutions like the Simeone or REVS down in Naples, Florida.
Great place.
And we compare notes or make referrals to one another from time to time. I have not, it's a shame on me, but I have not set foot in the Simeone yet. I hope to work that into a future trip.
Sure.
Dr. Simeone himself, before he opened his doors, visited us, and he was a guest speaker again many years ago, spoke to a group of enthusiasts here, and the wheels were certainly turning, for him. So he was setting up his own collection, and we helped with, some research early on for his vignettes, his exhibit spaces that he has there. So, yes, but I have not visited yet to this state.
It's a fantastic place, and it's amazing. But and I've gotten to actually see the library, which is not on the public tour, but it's spectacular. I mean, it's exactly what you would expect a library from a guy who is a fanatic would look like. You know, there's lots of little tables with works in progress and things that he's mapping out or checking out and all that. And it's just fantastic. And it's almost as interesting as the cars, and the cars are by no means a slouch when it comes to that. I got to wonder though, how many complete sets of Automobile Quarterly magazine do you have? And it's actually a book. Yeah, I think there's 52 volumes of four a year or something of Automobile Quarterly, which is a wonderful resource.
It is. And we certainly have a full set here. Probably in duplicate, and we do turn, you know, some future collections away, but a perfect example of sort of the cornerstone of a library and, yeah, sort of the beginnings of research for a lot of researchers.
Sure.
And then the more obscure periodicals that we have too, those are, you know, there were short runs, say during the 1950s, for example, mm-hmm. where you can't get material elsewhere. But I should say that our National Speed Sport News collection is enviable. That's heavily used.
Sure.
We have that in bound sets too. So a rare resource that's definitely used.
Is there a way that, I mean, are you digitizing everything, I would imagine? I mean, that's probably a stupid question. Of course you are. but.
Yes, I mean, we do digitize on demand, and we're embarking on a few projects to digitize more fragile material. So it's a question of prioritization.
Sure.
We did just receive a very generous grant for digitization, and we've got several projects that are ongoing based on our internal review of collections that we have so we can prioritize. But that's the best way to both preserve and share what we have. Not everyone can set foot in Watkins Glen. So we hope to have more content on our website in the future of some of our sure. rare materials.
Well, I know I've recently subscribed to newspapers.com, and it's staggering the amount yes. of stuff on there. I mean, they must have mm-hmm. a staff of 20. No, they must have a staff yeah. of like 2,000. Mm-hmm. It's, I mean, to be able to do that, it's very time consuming, but, you know, certainly worth the effort because in theory, digital is forever, right?
Well, yes, formats always change, so forever is a tough word.
Right.
We certainly want to retain originals, but for by and large, for people who are looking for information specifically, digital is the way to go. And virtually everything is portable. Most of us have been using digital images for years now at this point
sure.
as a sort of standard. Cameras being digital, born digital, as we say in the business. So as we go through our various older collections, and we prioritize, we do want to make much of that, and that'll, available, and that process will ramp up, in the years mm-hmm. ahead.
And, you know, I don't see that people would have a problem paying for stuff like that for information like that. I mean, I always say this, and I shouldn't say it out loud, dude. If Google started charging every month, I would be the first to sign up because I couldn't live without Google. You know, I use it. I don't know how many times a day, ridiculous amount of times a day. And if they said it's $50 a month, I'd say 50, here you go. I wouldn't think twice about it. I mean, you know, when the internet first started, everybody was charging. And then that business model kind of subsided and people realized that nobody wanted to pay to do this, that, or the other. And now it seems to be coming back more and more prevalent with news and news organizations because the cost of doing business is so expensive, you know.
Well, exactly. And we charge for our services and we charge for photo reproduction. And we have more elaborate agreements for film or we will in the future. But it's by and large, no one protests against our fee structure. And it helps to keep the lights on for sure.
Yes. Yeah, it absolutely does. And I think that, and your facility is dedicated to, I just read this yesterday or last night, to John Bishop, the founder of IMSA. IMSA was to me one of the greatest. It was my era when I grew up. IMSA was important, and that was the '70s and the '80s. And IMSA was just so cool back then. And John Bishop, you know, what a visionary.
Absolutely. I was fortunate enough to know John and Peg, when they were living with us. John saw to it that we saw IMSA's or we received IMSA's archive, the extent that they had, driver's files from when John ran it. So this was from the origins in 1969 all the way through the early 90s. So it's film collections, photos. Peg used to put together a beautiful annual scrapbook of race results. And we have all of that material here at the center. So, yeah, certainly IMSA's near and dear to me. And it's and the importance of IMSA can't be, I don't think, overstated in terms of the development of professional sports car racing.
Sure. And I was too young for Can-Am when it was in its heyday and didn't really understand what was going on, but I certainly appreciated IMSA and going to the great tracks, Riverside and Road Atlanta and just all the great places and Watkins Glen. And I've been to a few races up there, and that's what a beautiful setting that Watkins Glen is. Forget the racetrack. It's beautiful on its own. And then you add that into it. So during the race weekend, I mean, I bet people are just beating your door down. You just have a tough time of keeping people away, right?
We do get busy, certainly race weekends, but all the way through the late spring, or I should say spring, all the way into late fall, we get general tourism activity, but we also get tour groups that come through the area. I'm sure you're aware how popular tours are, so it could be a group of Porsches, or last weekend it was Triumph TRs.
Nice.
50 traveling through the area. So frequently clubs make us a destination on their trip. So it's the general tourists that come through, but frequently researchers stop in. Mostly they make an appointment so we can pull materials ahead of time.
Sure.
But it's grateful to see a whole range of enthusiasts walk through our doors.
Do you, and is there an admission charge, or how does that work?
We currently don't have an admission charge at
all.
You
like our philosophy. I like that. We don't charge anything. Come on in.
We encourage membership, participation in our annual sweepstakes. We've had new Corvettes for the past five years or so. And we have a modest gift shop and items for sale online too. So, and we like to show a film that was produced for the first 25 years. It covers the first 25 years of racing in Watkins Glen, called 25 Years at Speed, narrated by the late, great Brock Yates.
Oh, wow.
So it's a little history piece in and of itself, because it was produced in the 70s. So Brock has some great, great sideburns. And, there's some extremely rare film footage in there of racing, at the time. So, people would appreciate that, as well as a little history lesson from Kip Zider, who manages visitor services here for us. He's the face that everyone sees when they walk through the door. So everybody gets a little taste of racing. They can dig as far as they want. There's picking up a book off the shelf or making a more formal research request.
Sure. Well, we had the great sideburns of all time. David Hobbs was on our show a couple of weeks ago. He had those mutton chops going on. When we return, we'll delve deeper into sideburns and all that good stuff. We'll be back in a couple of minutes if you got a few minutes to spare, Mark.
Oh, of course.
All right. We'll see you in a couple of minutes.
Questions or comments, contact us at podcast@classicautomall.com.
Whether you want to buy or sell a classic, collectible, or special interest vehicle, you need to visit the Classic Auto Mall website for more information. If you're looking to buy, you can easily search our inventory of more than 1,000 vehicles on the web at classicautomall.com. And if you'd like to know all the advantages of selling your car through consignment, the information's available on our website, or you can talk to a classic car specialist who can answer all your questions. It's easy, safe, and convenient. Plus, we sell worldwide. We're always adding new vehicles to our inventory, so make sure you subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow us on social media, and check our website, classicautomall.com.
Hi, I'm Joe DeLapp. I've been on the National Fundraising Board at St. Jude for 20 years. On September 28th, we're holding our Walk Run fundraiser to help the sick kids at St. Jude. Go online to stjude.org/walkrun. That's stjude.org/walkrun. And look for St. Jude Walk Run in your area. Or if you'd like, you can join my fundraiser supporting the Walk Run this year. You can go to walkrun.stjude.org/DELAP. That's DELAPP. That's walkrun.stjude.org/DELAP. Thank you.
When it comes to car magazines, are you tired of reading about mega-dollar collector cars you can't afford, or endless reporting on auctions and how-to tech stories that don't interest you? Then Crankshaft is the car magazine for you. Crankshaft is a 144-page softcover quarterly filled with all sorts of fascinating stories, the type of car features you won't find anywhere else. It features American and foreign cars, pre- and post-war era cars of distinction including sports cars, muscle cars, and regular family sedans too. To discover what many car enthusiasts are saying is the best car magazine ever published, you can purchase either a single copy for $12.95 plus $3 postage, or a one-year subscription, four issues, for $59.95. To order your copy, go to www.crankshaftmagazine.com. That's www.crankshaftmagazine.com.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
And we're back with the Classic Auto Mall show from the Classic Auto Mall studios with the infamous Pat Travers in the background playing a little slide guitar on that. I love that. I love Pat Travers. Joining us, Mark Steigerwald, the executive director of the IMRRC. My wife said, that's a mouthful. How do you remember all that stuff? I said, well, because I write it down. It's funny how that works. She goes to the grocery store without a list. I don't know how she does it. I'd come home with a, I'd come home with a can of beans and say, is that everything, honey? So people want to get involved with the International Motor Racing Research Center. What's the best way they can do it? Become members, donations? How does all that work?
Yeah, certainly membership is at the cornerstone of our following. We've had some of our members have been with us since the beginning. They know we're a 501c3 nonprofit, and that's how we keep the lights on and keep our services flowing. So beyond membership, we do have a sweepstakes every year. We have a Z06 Corvette this year. It's our fifth Corvette, if I'm not mistaken. Helps as well. And then the gala that we did have last week where you were a guest, honoring Zach Brown, we raised a little money that night too. So we're very fortunate there. We've had so many sponsors in motorsports and locally here in the Southern Tier in the Watkins Glen area that support our cause. So of course we also receive material donations too, those photo collections that I mentioned earlier.
Yeah, the dinner was fantastic with Zach Brown and Bobby Rahal was fantastic as a host. You should get him back every year. Of course, yes. if you honor him, then you'd have to. Well, have you already honored him, or is he?
We have honored Bobby. Yes, okay. we were glad he came back to join us. I couldn't imagine a more smoother flowing interview than he when he sat down with Zach.
You know, this is easy compared to that. To interviewing somebody on a stage and you know with a group of people in front of you is light years different than just doing this, talking to the camera. It's amazing how much harder that is to do. And he was so smooth at it. I mean, that's the amazing thing. And, basically without ego, you know, you can easily just go into your own little rabbit hole and am I supposed to be talking about, I'm talking about me.
You know? I was about to say Bobby's a legend in and of himself. And, you know, I grew up watching him race and compete. And, you know, it was for him to interview Zach that easy breezy format, you know, I could have sat and listened to both of them all night long.
Yeah, exactly. I was thinking, gosh, is it already over? You know, it's one of those things that you're not counting the time for it to be over. You're counting the time for it to continue.
Yes, you know, yeah.
And there was some spirited bidding on the acrylic painting. My goodness, the artist Bill Patterson painted a painting while we were sitting there eating dinner. I mean, it was damn good. It wasn't, you know, stick people and, you know, that funky looking car that, I mean, this, he did a great job on that and brought some serious money.
Yes, it did. We're grateful for Bill for that. It was a beautiful painting and I'm happy to say that it was a local bidder who won the painting and it's not far here from Watkins Glen. So a friend of the center's did purchase it and I think he was hanging it tomorrow or something like that. He and his wife had agreed on a place for it. So, it was a tremendous, tremendous effort on Bill's part. And to have that sort of entertainment, too, aspect of it was, beneficial to the evening.
Sure. Yeah, it was. The opening bid was more than my total bid was going to be. I was like, well, but I love silent auction stuff. I did win the P4 Ferrari though, which is what a fantastic model that is. Oh my God.
That's quite a collector's piece. Yeah. So it's very, very rare.
Yeah. It's, the detail on it is, I don't know. I don't think a machine can do the detailing that you see on some of these models that they do. It's just spectacular. And it's a nice way to kind of allow somebody like me who could never afford a P4 Ferrari. I mean, they're millions and millions of dollars, but it's nice to be able to have a memento of it, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we had a great variety of items. Michael Andretti donated a helmet to the cause. We had artists that supplied paintings and prints. So yeah, we had a good selection.
Yeah, that's always fun. And it's, you know, you can't hover anymore because it's not in pencil. You know, it's all digital. So you're trying to keep up and get to, who's outbidding me? You're trying to look around the room and find out who it is that you need to stare down and make them think that they don't need to bid anymore. But obviously you want them to bid as much as possible. And, you know, that's the whole idea, right?
Oh, exactly.
So previous winners of the award include Chip Ganassi, Roger Penske, Mario Andretti, Richard Petty, the France family, Bobby Rahal, Lynn St. James, Mike Helton, Richard Childress. Wow, who's who of motor racing, isn't it?
Absolutely, and they all embody that same spirit that Cameron Argentzinger had. So I was fortunate to work with Cameron, who did serve as president of the IMRRC through 2008, and he was a true visionary. If you think about someone in their 20s wanting to begin European-style road racing in America right after World War II, his vision was clear. He made it happen, and then he brought Formula One to Watkins Glen, and for 20 years the USGP was here. So
I don't think a lot of people realize that today, that how long it was there and how it was very successful too, right? I mean, it wasn't.
Yes, there was a lot of changes that happened in Formula One, certainly from the car standpoint, but also from the management and the professional standpoint. Certainly sponsorship, when it, you know, entered the picture, changed racing in sure. general, not for Formula One. But during that era, all the way through 1980, we saw improvements in certainly car design, aerodynamics, and the drivers. Somebody like Jackie Stewart comes immediately to mind, who had his eye on the future of the sport. And, a lot of history took place right here in Watkins Glen. Not just Formula One, but other series as well. But that was a magical period and a favorite period for me personally.
I can only imagine just being involved in that in any way, shape, or form back in the day. Of course, the traveling circus that's now Formula One, where I don't know, you'd have room to put them up in Watkins Glen, would you? You'd have to take every Airbnb on the you know, within 100 miles.
Oh, I'm sorry, you broke up, Stuart.
Oh, yeah, no problem. I was just saying that today's traveling circus of the Formula One would be tough to put them all up in hotels. You'd have to have every hotel and Airbnb within 100 miles of there.
Yes, yeah. That's true. The sport has changed a lot in terms of amenities, and certainly the buy-in for a team. I can't imagine what the tire budget alone is for a current Formula One team, but yeah, the fans do benefit, and it's an exciting series still.
With, sure,
3 locations in the U.S. alone. Formula One Drive to Survive really elevated the awareness of Formula One.
And motor racing in general. I think it just opened people's eyes to the fact that there's personalities in it. It's interesting. You know, our friend Harry Hurst has Glory Days of Racing, the site on the Facebook site. And, you know, we were talking about what made the Glory Days the Glory Days. Well, it wasn't as safe. The drivers were characters. They got dirty when they raced. You know, when they pulled their helmet off, there was black stuff all over their face and, you know, a whole different world. But, correct me if I'm wrong. There's like a self-guided tour that you can take in Watkins Glen of the original track through the streets and through the town, right?
Yeah, so the original street circuit from 48 to 52 is all public roads, and it can all be traced today. We provide a map on our website as well as a physical map for those that are visiting us if they want to trace that. And we've honored past drivers in Watkins Glen in the Walk of Fame, and those are granite stones in the sidewalks throughout town. So you can have a walking tour as well as some of the greats that turned a wheel in Watkins Glen.
And it was everybody, right? I mean, your current exhibit now with Kathy Meredith's Motorsports Photographs. I mean, the photos from 1961 with Sterling Moss and Dan Gurney and Graham Hill and Andretti and I don't know who this guy is, but I liked his name, Wilkie Wilkerson, the chief mechanic for BRM. I just like saying his name.
Yes.
that's a great name, right? Mm. And Brabham from 69 and Jochen Rindt from 69, and he got a check for $50,000. Wow, that's a lot of money back then.
Certainly, yeah, the purse was always significant at the USGP. Those are famous names, and you know, again, from a different era. But we're pleased to be able to you know, introduce new folks to our history as well as the history of the sport in general.
In anything particular, your genre you're looking for? What are you looking for the library? What is your, on your wish list of things to get for the library? And well, notwithstanding the IMRRC Jeroboam of wine behind you.
Yeah. Yes, the Dan Gurney, the story is, as you know, that Dan Gurney started that tradition. I believe it was at Le Mans 67 with AJ Foyt. But yeah, we have several commemorative Jeroboams of champagne, and they happen to accumulate in my office for some reason. But the history of pretty much all aspects of motorsport, we attempt to document here. So as far as a wish list goes, we really do hone in on those unique items. So I think about manuscript materials, so those letters and photo collections as well too. But we're trying to fill in the gaps. We have an enviable library in terms of our book collection, periodicals. We always have gaps. You know, if somebody has a collection, Autosport magazine, for example, just comes to mind.
Sure.
Reach out to us and we'll try to fill those gaps in. But it is those unique, items that we seek that will really help our researchers and help tell the story of motorsports in general. People, we frequently talk about in this industry, we talk about stories. So that applies to all museums of all different, types. And the more we can, the richer we can make those stories, I think we all benefit there. And, sure. You know, a driver is a driver, for example, but drivers are multidimensional. One of my favorite, films, that depict motorsports is, Michael Kaiser's film. And it documents the 72 World Sports Car Series, and it's a tremendous movie because it shows, for example, Brian Redmond, you know, at home playing with his kids.
How cool!
You know, not just behind the wheel of a Porsche at speed,
right? So, an early version of Drive to Survive, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, and Michael was ahead of his time. Speed Merchants is the name of the film.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yes, yeah. One of the best films ever made about racing, in my opinion. And it's a period piece, but makes the drivers human. So, and I think there's more of that now with Drive to Survive and seeing what the drivers go through in terms of conditioning and,
last weekend, I mean, God, last weekend they almost had heat strokes in those cars. Yeah. It was so hot. And this is today. This is not, you know, 50 years ago. I mean, this is modern technology with everything that you could possibly have to not make it hot.
Yes.
And yet those guys they were sweating. They earned their keep last weekend, that's for certain. So, Mark, it's certainly been a pleasure having you on the show today. And tell us one more time, the website is...
racingarchives.org.
Racingarchives.org. Mark Steigerwald, the executive director of the IMRRC. Thanks again. We'll see you down the road, I'm sure.
Thanks, Stuart.
Ever since the first time you saw it, perhaps even as a child, you knew you wanted one. Now, you're at a point in your life where you have the means to buy and keep one. Your significant other is even in agreement. But where and how can you find one? And trust you know as much as you can about it before the purchase. That's why there's ClassicAutoMall.com. 1,000 classic vehicles of almost every conceivable make, model, and year. All under one climate-controlled roof. You can visit and look to your heart's delight. Or do everything online from the comfort of your own home. Shipping nearly everywhere worldwide. Classic Auto Mall can make your dream come true. Visit the World Wide Web at ClassicAutoMall.com.
Since the 1960s, J.C. Taylor has been America's premier specialty insurance provider for classic cars, antique autos, modified, and custom vehicles. Our customers have trusted us to protect their prized possessions for more than six decades. For more information, or to receive a quote, contact our expert team today by calling 888-ANTIQUE. Or by visiting our website at jctaylor.com/awr. That's 888-268-4783. or visit jctaylor.com/awr. Drive through time with peace of mind. J.C. Taylor.
Hi, I'm Joe DeLapp. I've been on the National Fundraising Board at St. Jude for 20 years. On September 28th, we're holding our Walk Run fundraiser to help the sick kids at St. Jude. Go online to stjude.org/walkrun. That's stjude.org/walkrun. And look for St. Jude Walk Run in your area. Or if you'd like, you can join my fundraiser supporting the Walk Run this year. You can go to walkrun.stjude.org/DELAPP. That's DELAPP. That's walkrun.stjude.org/DELAPP. Thank you.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
And we're back with the Classic Auto Mall Show from the Classic Auto Mall Studio in Morgantown, Pennsylvania. Mark Steigerwald, great guest. Boy, we could have talked to him all day.
Oh, boy.
He's got so much information there. And you know, the... I love that people are making not just a halfway attempt effort at preserving the history of motorsports and all that, but really deep diving into it and making sure that every base is covered. And it sounds like they've done a pretty spectacular job of that. I'd like to.
Mm-hmm.
I got to go see it now. So put another thing on my bucket list.
Yep. Every time you have a guest, I feel like I got to go somewhere else.
I know. It's like, oh, boy, we should really get
that
to see
on the
that.
List. Yeah. Yeah.
And, but it's nice to talk to people like him who are doing good.
Mm-hmm.
And a nice guy to begin with.
Sure.
And, you know, met him at, the event for Zach Brown up in, Corning, and it was a wonderful event and couldn't be, that's the great thing about this hobby, whether it's motor racing or people in the auction business or people in whatever branch of being in the car business is, they're mm-hmm. just all have interesting stories and interesting things going on. Some of our new arrivals this week. How about the 1952 Chevrolet Style Line Deluxe Sedan? Cardinal red and white over white. Two-owner car from 1952.
Amazing.
That is 10 years older than moi. This thing was garage kept, known mm-hmm. history, impeccable presentation. 235 cubic inch inline six. I guess that would be the Blue Flame six.
Kind of sporty, era. Yeah.
Yeah, kind of sporty. Three-speed manual. Tree on the tree.
Yeah. What I love about this car is that it has, I don't know if it's called articulated, hips, you know, the
right.
fenders in the back, but not in the front.
Yeah, they're bulgy in the back.
But so not in the front, so yeah. It's like very sporty.
Uh-huh.
It looks like it's moving.
Yeah, it does. It's in motion even when it's standing
That's
still.
That's exactly right.
So a wonderful car and a kind of an entry level to get into. A sedan is not the top of the heap when mm-hmm. it comes to value. The convertibles or the two-door hardtops come to mind of what, you know, the ones that are going to be the most valuable. But it's a great car to drive. And I talk to people all the time that have these and say, when I'm driving, when I'm in the driver's seat, I can't tell if it's a four-door or a two-door or,
right.
you know, it's just it all, it's the same perspective, mm-hmm. you know. And a wonderful car and, like I said, reasonable. And you can find all of these cars that I'm going to talk about on our website, classicautomall.com. How about the 1968 Datsun 2000 Roadster?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man, I love these.
Yeah.
Pagoda red over black. Well, you said that sarcastically.
No, I don't know.
Do you?
I like them, too.
Yeah, do I approve it?
Do you really, though?
Do you really? Frame off restored, redone 2-liter four-cylinder engine, 5-speed manual with a new clutch. Very rare model. You see the 1600s, but not quite as much the 2000s.
Mm-hmm.
They were just, obviously a 2-liter versus a 1.6-liter for the 1600s, which I'm not sure horsepower difference is 10 maybe or 11 horsepower difference. But so,
mm-hmm.
But this one is nicely done and a great driver and one that you take to a show, you'll be the only one there.
That's for sure.
I mean, no question about mm-hmm. it. And a lot of people don't understand or know that some of the Japanese imports started way earlier than the 80s when everybody kind
exactly.
of thought about Hondas and all that. Hondas were building cars bringing to the United States in the 60s
mm-hmm.
and winning in Formula One in the 60s. And we should have paid more attention to that. I think we would have, things would have been a little different. So we'll just leave it at that.
Okay.
All right. And the modern version of the Datsun 2000 is the 84 Pontiac Fiero Sport Coupe.
Mm.
Bright red over black and gray, 17,000 actual miles. Mm. Two owners from new, just immaculately preserved. This has got a 2.5-liter four-cylinder, four-speed manual. Again, an affordable classic. Something
fun
that
to
you
drive,
can enjoy.
Too.
Oh, they're fun to drive, and they'll get a thumbs up everywhere you go, and you stop at the gas station, and everybody will want to know what it is. And, mm-hmm. you know, Pontiac to a lot of people is foreign. They haven't seen.
And Fieras used to be all over the place. I mean, now it's rare to see one.
Yeah, you don't see them hardly at all anymore. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why that is. And, of course, the last version is the 86, I believe it was.
The GT.
The GT with a 5-speed mm-hmm. get rag manual, yeah. and it was the most power. And then they just stopped making it.
That's it.
We got it good, and then we quit.
But it's a mid-engine car, and the C8 is not the first mid-engine.
Right, exactly. GM,
so. Yeah, there weren't a lot of those around, so it's like for parts cars and things like that, they're just...
That's the problem, you know, finding a fender for something or, mm-hmm. you know, all that stuff comes into play when people want to collect something. They mm-hmm. think, oh, if I ever buy this and I drive it and something goes wrong, how am I going to fix it? So, also a new arrival, the 68 Chrysler Newport, sky blue metallic over light blue. I love the body style of this car.
This car is, I didn't know anything about these until we got one. And I'm like, I have to have this car. Yeah. If space and money were no object, this would be in my collection just because it's so unique and wild.
It is so wild looking, and it's the color's good on it. It's that sky blue metallic mm-hmm. over a light blue interior. Something about that body style is just really sexy. There's something about
it. So different.
Mm-hmm. And this thing's got a 440 in it.
Yeah, that helps.
So that is sexy, too. And with an A7 27 automatic, I mean, it's got the original interior. It's got, you know, all the bells and whistles from the day. And let's talk about an underappreciated or underlooked mm-hmm. upon car. I think those are going to surprise you in 5 or 10 years where people realize what they are and what they, you know.
Yeah, and again, this is one of those cars where you'd be the only one at the car show.
Absolutely.
The angles on this car is amazing. And frankly, it's reasonable.
Right. And there's you know, there's nothing wrong with being the only one at a car show.
It's really good.
You know, you go to some of these car shows and there's 30 of whatever driving, and that's okay. I mean, that's fine. Listen, there's strength in numbers and people like the similar things, and there's a reason that Camaros outsold Chrysler Newports or, you know, fill in the blank of any of that. But,
and Mopar designers were just such motorheads. I mean,
they were.
440, these big horsepower mills in these cars. Yeah. Just, wow.
And then another interesting 1960s, kind of affordable, and they're starting to get pricey, is the AMC, 1968 AMC AMX. It's black over black. And I'm telling you, black is a great color for an AMX. I don't think I've seen many of them in black.
No.
But that one really stands out. It's got the 290 cubic inch V8. 39,000 actual miles, long-term ownership, and a BorgWarner T10 manual. Blast to drive. Mm-hmm. Little pocket rockets. They were overlooked back in the day. I didn't know much about them when I was started getting into cars. And, you know, I followed the path of Trans Ams and Camaros and that kind of thing. And I think if I'd have known about the AMXs or had any inkling of what they were, I think I would have paid more attention.
Yeah.
I wish I had too. We had a dealer in the next big city near me, and I just didn't pay attention.
No, they were just another car. So, and last but not least, the 1930 Ford Model A Sport Coupe, Elk Point green and Kiwani green over brown.
All right.
LeBaron Bonnie interior, a 201 cubic inch inline four, which will basically run forever. It's got the correct colors and well restored. This is a nice car.
Yeah, I can't remember. I probably wrote it in the description what Kiwani green is.
Right.
Because I didn't know what it was. I'm like, where do they get these names?
Yeah, the names were, I love the color names. That's why I always talk about them. And uh-huh. They were just a lot of fun to talk about. And they had some interesting colors. And sometimes, you know, cars would be tri-colored interiors and two tones on the exterior, which you don't hardly see anymore. I was driving by a car lot the other day and I looked over and it was a sea of gray and black and white and just nondescript. Yeah. And there was one like a neon green neon, maybe. I don't know
if
it was a neon, but it was something little and small and bright green and it stood out like a sore thumb. And maybe not in a bad way, you know. I mean, and people have become a little bit, you know, jaded when it comes to.
There's the current Genesis ad out now for the GV, which is the 70 and 80, which are their SUVs, and they have some two tone interiors that are pretty striking.
Nice. I'm glad to see that. And you know, it's so funny. There are so many variables of cars out there, but yet Chevrolet, I don't think, is it Ford doesn't make a passenger car at all anymore, right? It's all SUVs,
it's all trucks.
Or trucks.
Or the Mustang, but.
The Mustang, yeah. And then, and Chevrolet is the Corvette. And is the Malibu and the Impala?
Malibu's done.
It's done. Is the Impala done? I think
I think so too.
So I don't think, but yet, But yet Mercedes has tons of cars, and BMW has tons of cars, not just SUVs or trucks.
So Hyundai, Kia, they're still making cars.
They're still making lots of cars, so I don't know what happened to the big three. They're still even referred to
as that. Yeah, right.
Well, they're just looking for the bigger return, the higher profit margins, I guess, because, you know, you can buy a really nicely appointed Hyundai Elantra, the smaller one, for $25,000.
Right, which is cheap nowadays. Yeah. I mean, it would have bought five of my Trans Ams back in the day.
I drove through a Subaru lot, and I couldn't find an Outback for under $40,000, and most of them were $50,000.
Isn't that crazy? And you know what, speaking of 50. Yes. 50th anniversary of the Lamborghini Countach.
Wow.
1974, I was seen, actually first seen at the 71 Geneva Motor Show, but the 1974 was the first year of the LP400. 3.9 liter V12, 370 horsepower. Through 1978, so 4 years, 152 of them built. That was it.
Give me two.
Yeah, I'll take two. And overall, from the whole run of them, 2,049 were built because they kind of got pretty popular in the 80s. You saw them a lot. And then they just, they built another one in 2022, the LPI 804, made 112 of them. Mm. One was on BAT, bring a trailer with 85 miles on it, brought 2.5 million.
Wow. It's a good reason.
It's a good looking car, though.
Good reason to build them.
Yeah. And it's a really good looking car and an interesting color combination. It's on, it's like a bronzy, whatever. So, there's hope. You know, of course, a lot of people had the poster of the Lamborghini Countach on their wall back in the day, and everybody. I had it. You had it.
Had it with the, had a mirrored background.
Oh,
fancy. But, and that makes me feel old that they're 50 years old now because they were new back then. It was like,
you know, and you see, like the Mustang is 60 years old. You got the Lamborghini Countach. It's harder to believe that the Lamborghini is 50 years old than the Mustang being 60 years old.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those things that we all dreamed of that car, and they were a beast to drive. To back them up, you literally had to raise the door up, sit on the sill, the door sill, and kind of lean your head out and hope your legs are long enough to get to the clutch and completely engage or disengage it. And they were hard. You could not see out the back of them.
That's right. They're going for big money too now.
Yeah, they're bringing $400,000, $500,000, $600,000, $700,000 for these restored ones. But I would imagine a restoration job on a Lamborghini Countach has to be a big number.
Mm.
I would imagine that you could spend $300,000 or $400,000 restoring one.
I saw one actually at a restoration shop in Bucks County. I won't mention the name, but they had it torn apart, and you would be surprised how sloppy the structure is on the inside.
No, I wouldn't be that.
I mean, it's a great looking car and everything, but inside, the inner structure is not pretty. They didn't spend a lot of time with cosmetics in there.
Well, and you know, a lot of the stuff were cheap parts that they had inside in the interiors of these things. I mean, they were, you know, they were buying whatever was kind of available, I think, at the time. And so it's not, you see some shortcuts that were taken from the factory.
Yeah.
Of course, they're not the only manufacturer in the 70s who were taking shortcuts the building. And
yeah, ever see the inside of a Pantera?
Oh God!
Yeah,
or those a Pinto. Things,
yeah, and they were and those Panteras were temperamental. They just didn't want to run right.
Right,
and
overheat,
and crazy. So, but you know, talking about restoring and all that, are there? Do you think there's still great barn finds out there? Is there still stuff that's hidden that? It hadn't seen the light.
Apparently. I'd say in Pennsylvania, there's probably a good amount of them, for sure.
You know, it'd be fun just to get a three-car trailer and a winch.
Start knocking on doors.
Start knocking on doors.
I agree. Let's do it.
Pocket full of cash.
Let's do it. Grab some cameras and go out with Randy.
And get a pocket full of cash and say, hey.
Can we look in your barn?
It's basically what Dennis Collins does, except people call him.
That's, you know. Well, same with Wayne Carini. They've built themselves up. I mean, their TV shows are great, but their TV shows also made them successful in their business. Because people now know, who are we going to call when we got a barn find? Oh, well, we'll call Wayne or we'll call Dennis. So,
well, call Stuart.
Call Stuart and 888-227-0914 or podcast at classicautomall.com.
That's right. That's
website is www.classicautomall.com. We'll see you next week with, I don't know who's going to be on the show.
Great.
Maybe
but
somebody.
Don't hurt your Countach. That's the main thing. Be careful with it.
Take care out there. See ya.
You've been listening to the Classic Auto Mall Show with your host, Stuart Howden. Executive producer, Steve Safier. Produced and engineered by yours truly, J.R. Russ. Available on ClassicAutoMall.com, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. Questions, answers, or comments? Write us at ClassicAutoMall.com. And if you want to talk about buying a classic car seen on our website, you're looking for a particular vehicle, or want to consign your classic for sale, write us at info@ClassicAutoMall.com or call and talk to a real live classic car specialist at 888-227-0914. That's 888-227-0914. Music courtesy of the Pat Travers Band. For tour dates, contact, and stuff, visit pattravers.com. Produced by Car Smarts Media. Copyright all rights reserved.
This is the Classic Auto Mall Show. Listen on this station and wherever you get your podcasts, including Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, Buzzsprout, Deezer, Listen Notes, Pandora, Player FM, Pocket Casts, Podcast Addict, Podcast Index, Podchaser, Spotify, and, of course, ClassicAutoMall.com.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.